Hi, welcome to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5. My name is Nadja, and I'm co-hosting with Lauren today.
Hi.
The focus of today's show is children's books as they relate to animal rights, and I'm pretty excited about the show, partly because I have a three-year-old daughter who I'm raising as a vegan, and I'm always looking for books that help promote vegetarianism and books that have our lifestyle in them, and also books that portray the life of farm animals as it really is, as compared to the sort of idyllic barnyard settings that you see in a lot of kids' books. As I was leaving for the show today, Chloe said to me, "Tell the people, don't go to McDonald's and eat Happy Meals there."
Yeah.
It was very sweet. So that's the message for everyone out there listening. We're going to focus most of the show today on a Canadian author. His name is Nicholas Reed, and he's written a book called Saving Emily. Lauren has the press release from the book, and she's just going to read that for us now.
Sure. It says here, "This unique, sensitively written novel for young readers about life on a modern farm skillfully interweaves two stories, one from the animal perspective of a cow named Emily, and the other from a human viewpoint of a 12-year-old boy named Chris. Author Nicholas Reed eloquently describes how two very different lives encounter similar disruptions and are ultimately brought together in a life and death adventure. Though Emily's early experiences on the farm are pleasant, she soon senses her mother's unmistakable signals that all is not well. Before long, she must face the cruel realities of branding, a livestock market, confinement in a feedlot, and finally a frightening ride in a cattle truck. Chris, too, is dealing with the harsh reality of a broken home and being forced to move from the city to the country to start a new life when his mother decides to remarry. Compared to the busy city, Chris finds the country to be a lonely place, and he has trouble making friends until he meets Gina, a true free spirit with a love for animals. How Chris and Gina scheme to rescue Emily from a sad fate makes a fascinating and instructive tale."
So we'll be interviewing Nicholas about the book and why he decided to write it and what research he did and what sort of response he's getting to the book. And then later in the show, Lauren and I are just going to do sort of a mini book review of a few books and maybe read a few excerpts of books that are directed both at sort of the preschool level and then for older kids as well that either are animal rightsy or vegetarianism, things like that. So we'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Nicholas Reed about his book, Saving Emily. Hi, welcome back to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5. We're focusing today's show on children's books, and we're going to be talking with Nicholas Reed, who's a Canadian author, and he's just had a book published called Saving Emily. Welcome to the show, Nicholas.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for agreeing to be on the show. Both Lauren and I have read the book, and we think it's a very needed book.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important for kids to learn about these issues. Tell me how the idea came about and the characters and the plot of the story.
Well, it's not my first children's book. Before this one, I wrote and published one called One in a Million, which was about a dog in an animal shelter. And that was born out of my experience volunteering at the local Humane Society here in Vancouver. And it was well received, and I was pleased and so forth. But then it occurred to me that books about dogs, valuable as they are kind of a dime a dozen. Everybody
yeah.
loves dogs, and everybody worries about how they're treated. And I think more people care about how they're treated than perhaps any other kind of animal. And that's not true of farm animals. And that's why I decided that perhaps in my next book I would address an issue that isn't quite as easy.
Mm.
So I thought about a beef cow. Because, I mean, you do have to think about the sort of appeal of the animal, and beef calves are very cute. And I think that if people took the time to think about how a beef cow leads its life, well, they would think twice about it.
Yeah. Do you have children? Is that part of the reason you wrote the book?
No, I have a niece and a nephew, but no kids of my own.
Yeah. I wonder if you could share a passage of the book with us for our listeners who don't know the book.
Okay, well, I thought I'd just start at the beginning,
sure.
And I won't read for too long, but yeah, it'll give people an idea of what the book is about. I should explain that the book is written sort of from the point of view of the cow, but also from the point of view of two children.
Mm-hmm.
So the animals do talk in the book, but as I'm sure listeners appreciate, that's a fairly standard literary device.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'll just start at the very beginning. Marigold looked down at Emily and worried. of all the calves she'd had in the last 12 years, Emily was the smallest, and her birth had been the most difficult. When Marigold was young, her babies had been born almost effortlessly. Like all newborn calves, they would struggle at first to find their footing, but once they had, they were all healthy and strong. But not Emily. Her birth had been slow and painful. Marigold knew it would be as soon as she started to feel Emily appear. In the past, Marigold's young were born outside in the pasture, but not this time. This time she stayed inside a barn and had to have help from a veterinarian. The vet reached deep inside Marigold to grab at Emily when she wouldn't come on her own. The vet also gave Marigold a shot that made her relax, but it made her feel strange. There were other men standing around as well, men Marigold was used to seeing from time to time on the ranch, and they were all busy talking as the vet worked and struggled. The sounds of the voices, so urgent and impatient, made Marigold feel even more nervous, and if it hadn't been for the vet, Emily might not have survived. When it was over, Marigold was exhausted, more tired and worn out than she could ever remember being. The vet was tired, too. He breathed heavily, taking in big, slow breaths. But when he finally found the breath to speak, his voice changed from an angry, impatient tone to a kind one. By that time, Marigold was so busy looking after Emily that she barely noticed. But when she did, the change in the vet's voice made her feel better. Suddenly she felt a little less frightened and a little more hopeful that things would be all right. Still she worried. Emily was such a scrawny, stick-like thing, so different from the other calves she'd had, that Marigold feared her baby might not live. Each hour that passed made her feel better, but she wouldn't take her eyes off Emily, almost believing that it was only through watching her that she stayed alive. "Emily," Marigold said, as she licked her daughter lovingly from ear to tail and hoof to head, "my little girl, I wonder what life will be like for you." And if you want to know what life is like for her, you have to get the book.
Great. I find that when I was reading the beginning of the book, it really sucked me in, and I think that part of why it was so intriguing is because it is told from the perspective of the non-human animals. And part of the question that I wanted to ask you was about anthropomorphism.
Right.
And I know that with Chicken Run last year, you know that
yeah.
it was heavily criticized by the meat agribusiness industry because uh-huh. they said, you know, they're anthropomorphizing animals.
Right.
I mean, Disney's been doing that for how long, and no
yes,
one's
yes.
been
well,
saying very much. But
yeah, and I have to say that when I submitted the book for publication, the publisher had concerns about that.
Mm.
He said something like, "Talking cows?" Until I pointed out that, you know, it's not a new device in movies or children's books. Animals have been talking for a very long time now in literature. And yeah, I'm not surprised that the people who raise animals for food would object, because they don't want us to think that animals have feelings and needs and fears and that kind of thing, because it makes what they do that much more outrageous. But I don't think that it's a problem. I think that most kids are open to the idea that animals do have feelings,
mm-hmm.
Kids who live with animals, with dogs or cats or whatever, I'm sure that they recognize that those animals communicate,
mm-hmm.
and they communicate to those kids somehow, you know, with barks or with gestures. And so talking is just one, I think, small step away from that. Yeah, you do have to you have to use your imagination a bit, but I don't think you have to use it too much.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I was really impressed with in the book that I think is very important for children reading the book was the accuracy of the life of a cow that's being raised for human consumption, just in terms of like putting the ear tags
in
and
thank you.
Branding and the castration
right.
and the transport and the stockyards, like the whole, you know, feedlots, like it was very, very well done.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that was the
I had to do a lot of research.
Yeah. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I went to Calgary. I flew to Calgary from Vancouver, and I spent some time in cattle country in southern Alberta, driving around in a pickup truck and listening to country music and not wearing a cowboy hat. But I have to say that if I'd had one, I might have. I visited all of these places. I visited feedlots and I visited cattle ranches and spent time on them and learned from the guys who work with cattle what they do. And I attended an auction and watched cattle being loaded onto a cattle truck. I could not get into a slaughterhouse because nobody's allowed in a slaughterhouse.
Mm-hmm.
people who run slaughterhouses just don't want anyone to know what goes on in them. I have to say I was kind of relieved, but I did try, but there was no way. So, yeah, no, it did take a lot of research because I didn't want anybody reading the book to use that as a criticism.
Yeah.
I didn't want anybody to say, you don't know what you're talking about. So I did take a lot of time and care researching the subject and making sure that everything that happens to Emily is something that happens to the average beef cow. But I do want to stress to anybody listening that it does have a happy ending. Yes, I mean, you know, it has a sad middle but a happy ending.
I appreciated that. Often the books that I'm reading about animal stuff does not have a happy ending.
Right,
right. So it's nice.
Well, I often get people asking me, does it have a happy ending? And, and a happy ending is important.
How has the book been received in general, both, you know, just by children, by reviewers, and especially I'd like to know if you've got some feedback from people involved in the industry?
Well, it hasn't been out for a very long time, so I'm still waiting for feedback.
Right.
I hope it's positive. Although I have, there have been a couple of nice reviews, particularly from America, who said that, and I appreciate it. They said that it, although it raises an important issue, it's in no way a tract, and that meant a lot to me because what I want it to be first and foremost is an interesting story. Yeah, the story has a theme, and the theme matters. But most of all, what it is a story, and I hope an entertaining one. I haven't heard from anybody in the industry. However, I have to tell you that I did submit it to a publisher somewhere in Western Canada. I can't remember the publisher's name. And she rejected the book, not because she didn't like the book, but because she thought that the beef industry was something we should be proud of in Canada, and that it was unfair of me to malign it in this terrible way. So people are sensitive.
Yeah, for sure. One thing that I wanted to comment on, I thought that both Emily, who's the young cow, and Gina, who's a young woman who is a vegetarian and a bit of a radical in this, this small rural town, were very strong female characters, and they were both my two favorite characters. But my one criticism of the book was the women as they were portrayed compared to the men overall. The first character we meet is a rancher, and then we meet a rancher's wife who has a hobby of cooking, and then we meet Chris, and his mother is portrayed as wife and mother, and she's moving to a small town for her doctor husband. And then we meet Gina, and Gina's aspiring to be an actress model. I just wondered if you thought about the roles that you were assigning the women, and whether you thought, you know, maybe making Gina aspire to be, you know, work for PETA or be a journalist or something like that. Did you consider that as you were writing it?
Well, no, I certainly didn't consider having her work for PETA, because the thing was that I wanted to make all the characters in the book, particularly the kids in the book, kids that other kids would relate to. And Gina is a bit different, but every kid knows a kid who's a bit different. So I wanted them to recognize that kid in Gina. And then Chris, I just wanted to be more of the average kid who doesn't really go through life thinking about these big issues until, well, who knows if they ever do. But Gina is special. Gina has decided to look at these issues in a way that really counts, and that does make her stand out. When I said she wanted to be an actress and a model, you know what, I suppose I could have said that she wanted to be prime minister, but you know what, until you mentioned it, it honestly didn't occur to me. Now, I kind of wish that I made her aspiration to be prime minister or, you know, surgeon general or something like that.
Well, that's good to hear, but I really did appreciate that both Emily the cow and Gina were very strong and independent characters.
Oh, well, I'm glad. Yeah, and I wanted to have both a boy and a girl in the book because I wanted it to appeal to both boys and girls. But I also have heard from fellow children's writers that while girls will read books about boys, boys will not read books about girls.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's why it was very important to have a boy, one of the reasons why it was important to have a boy as one of the central characters.
Yeah, so you could widen the audience.
And that matters to me, of course.
Yeah. Have you got any feedback from children, just kids that you know that have read the book and responded to it?
Yeah, and they sort of are a little uncomfortable, you know, with the issue that it raises, but they like the story, and that matters. And I don't expect to turn anybody vegetarian with this book.
Oh, I mean,
if somebody wrote to me and said, I'm not eating meat anymore after reading Saving Emily, I'd say, well, good for you. But, you know, I can't expect that. But
what
I do hope
for... So your goal was more to raise awareness than...
You know, and I hope that after reading this book, kids will you know, next time they're served their McDonald's hamburger, they just might think twice before biting into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe the next time after that they're served their McDonald's hamburger, they'll say, well, maybe I'll have something else this time.
Mm-hmm.
That would be nice.
Mm-hmm. What I liked about it, too, was I think that it provided, like you were saying, you know, it's kind of this, it's an alternative voice in a slew of so much media that is targeted towards kids that says everything is okay and hamburgers do grow in hamburger patches and that kind of thing. So letting kids, you know, look at the information that's out there and then assess for themselves what they think is pretty great.
I mean, because it's true. We do live in a world where kids are taught that hamburgers grow on hamburger trees. And that's just insane. So this is one tiny voice that says, well, guess what, kids? No, they don't.
Mm-hmm.
They actually come from living animals, and I bet that if you were to meet one of those animals, you know, you'd probably grow quite fond of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was another thing I did while I was in Alberta. I did spend some time with some cattle, and they are interesting when you take the time to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, few people ever do that.
Mm-hmm.
One part of the book that I quite liked was the portrayal of the farm sanctuary. I thought that was great that was included, and there are a few farm sanctuaries. I know there's two big ones in the States. Did you know about farm sanctuaries before? Did you visit a farm sanctuary?
Yes. Well, as a matter of fact, there is one in Alberta that I'm very pleased to tell your listeners about. It's called Big Julie's Rescue Ranch. It's just outside Fort McLeod in southern Alberta, run by a man named Roger Brinker. And Roger is, he's in his 60s now, and he is terribly disabled. And yet, he looks after almost 30 cows and a number of dogs and five or six horses on about 180 acres of land, a beautiful, beautiful piece of land in the Alberta foothills. And he's been doing this now for some time. So it was his ranch that was the inspiration for the rescue ranch in the book. And the story wouldn't be what it was without his help and input.
Mm-hmm.
He's a marvelous man, and he does tremendous selfless work. And, you know, especially in an area like that, where literally as far as the eye can see, there are just cattle and cattle and more cattle,
mm-hmm.
and all destined for the chop.
Mm-hmm. Did he give you any advice for the book, or did he just let you observe?
I don't know that he gave me any advice, but he certainly was very gracious about showing me around his farm. And he also had a lot of information about beef cattle and the lives they lead and the kind of people in the part of the world where he lives. And all of it was very, very helpful. Despite seeing an awful lot of ugly things when I was there, it was a very worthwhile experience,
mm-hmm.
an eye-opening experience. And the kind of, if more people bothered again to have a look, they might think twice about having that steak for dinner.
Mm-hmm. I think that you do that so beautifully in the book, talking about a really ugly subject matter in a lot of ways that's grounded in a lot of pain and a lot of suffering for animals, but at the same time you're able to present it in a way that I wouldn't feel if I gave to, you know, a kid in my life that I'd feel like I was traumatizing them or adding a burden to them somehow.
Oh, well, I'm glad.
Yeah, so I really appreciated that because I think that's something that's a tension for humane educators all the time, that how do you talk about these issues in a way that doesn't just make kids really upset and make them feel more powerless than maybe they already feel.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I thought that was great.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, and I don't want to traumatize anybody. As I said before, what I wanted to do was to tell a good story,
mm-hmm.
a good story with a theme, but mainly a good story. And I think, I don't know, to tell you the truth, if there's another book out there anywhere which has a beef cow as its heroine. If there is, I'd like to see it, but I don't know of it. And I just thought it was time that farm animals, as you said, there last year there was Chicken Run, but I thought it was time that, you know, something like a beef cow had her day, had
mm-hmm.
her place in the sun. And so that's what I've tried to do with this book. And I hope somebody reads it.
There's another section in the book that's critical of the rodeo. Did you go to rodeos as well?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it's very timely now because we have the stampede going on in Calgary. And in BC, we have a number of rodeos. I don't know if you have them there in Ontario. Probably.
I don't go, so.
Oh.
I actually, I don't know.
Yeah, but yes, I did. I did, and that was something else I had to do a lot of research on, because, again, I didn't want anybody saying, you don't know what you're talking about when you talk about rodeos.
Mm-hmm.
So, I did have to go, and it wasn't fun, I promise. Certainly some of the events just make one so angry that this kind of thing can be passed off as fun, but it was important to go and see it for myself. But I'm glad it's over.
Yeah. Are you planning other book projects for the future?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I'm now finishing one about cats. I used to volunteer in a cat shelter, a privately run cat shelter, and I'm finishing one about, it's a collection of individual stories about cats, but the thread running through it is this one cat who arrives in the shelter and meets other cats, and then eventually at the end of it we discover why he's there and how he gets out.
And that's a children's book as well?
Yeah. So it'll be my third one. The first one, as I said, was called One in a Million, which is about a dog in an animal shelter.
Right.
And that's still available in print as well, I'm pleased to say.
I just wanted to ask one more question.
Yeah.
What age, actually, is the book directed at?
Well, I would say 8 to 12.
Yeah.
Because it's fairly long. I mean, it is a novel for kids. It's not a picture book, although there are a few drawings in it. So you have to be a fairly good reader to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue that it addresses is a fairly sophisticated one. But, no, I think that an 8-year-old kid wouldn't be too young for it.
Yeah.
You know, and certainly by the time you're 12, I would hope you start thinking seriously about some of these issues, and maybe they're issues that would be raised in a schoolroom.
Mm-hmm.
There's a point in the book where Gina says to Chris, I think, you're such a pessimist. And it was the only point I thought, I wonder if most kids would know that word. But I was thinking, you know, it kind of makes sense with Gina's character that she would say that. And that it didn't
she is
seem,
a smart kid.
Yeah, and that she would, might use a language that seemed eccentric for a younger kid.
Yeah.
But
And
there's no reason that if the kid, you know, couldn't look it up or, you know,
well, exactly.
Stuff like that. So.
If it's a new word, it means they can learn a new word.
Yeah. I really like to usually ask our guests about how they even got into thinking about animal issues and animal welfare rights types issues. Could you tell us a little bit of background about yourself and how you got interested?
Okay. Well, interested in animals, it's just a visceral thing with me. Ever since I was a kid, I've been interested in animals, and it's just part of my makeup. I can't really point to one incident and say that was life-changing.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you how I became vegetarian, if you're interested.
I
was selling raffle tickets on behalf of an organization that opposes leghold traps, and somebody refused to buy the ticket because he said I was a hypocrite. And I was doing this just before sitting down to dinner with him, and I what do you mean? And he said, well, here you are selling tickets for these, you know, muskrats or squirrels or whatever, and you're about to sit down and have a pig or a duck or whatever it is we were having for dinner. And I, of course, took tremendous offense at this. And then 3 days later realized he was right. And decided, well, you know, I was an awful hypocrite, so I'd better stop eating them. And that was about 15 years ago. And then since 1991, I have been writing. I wrote a weekly column about animals for the Vancouver Sun newspaper. And now I am a beat reporter specializing in animal issues. So I write about animals all the time now.
Okay.
That's great. Nicholas, I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about your book, and I'd like to congratulate you. I thought it was a great book. And
thank you.
I have a 3-year-old daughter, so I'm going to keep the book on hand.
Okay.
She's a little bit older.
Right. Well, thank you so much. Maybe by then it'll actually be worth something.
And hopefully we'll get you on to talk about your book about cats.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. You're listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, Lauren and I are going to spend some time talking about some other children's books. Hi, welcome back to Animal Voices. I'm Nadja, and I'm co-hosting with Lauren, and we're going to spend a little bit of time just talking about a few other children's books. We just spoke with Nicholas Reed about his book, Saving Emily, and Lauren and I each have a book here that is probably aimed at the same age range as Saving Emily, so for like the, you know, 8 to 12-year-old. The book that I wanted to talk about is Beautiful Joe, and it's a very old book. It was written actually in 1894, and it's a book that I read when I was a kid, and it was actually a book that really influenced me a lot. So I wanted to talk about it just because I think it's despite being a bit old-fashioned, it's a great book. It's written by a woman. Her name is Margaret Marshall Saunders, and the book actually is
published under the name Marshall Saunders because at that time it was easier to get published as a male writer, so her name is sort of disguised there. But she was a vegetarian, an animal rights activist. She was an advocate for women and for children. She was an anti-poverty activist, so quite a great woman. She was a Canadian woman. And the book is based on a true story. The preface to the book, I'm just going to read it here from the author. Beautiful Joe is a real dog, and Beautiful Joe is his real name. He belonged during the first part of his life to a cruel master who mutilated him in the manner described in the story. He was rescued from him and is now living in a happy home with pleasant surrounding and enjoys a wide local celebrity. The character of Laura is drawn from life, and to the smallest detail is truthfully depicted. The Morris family has its counterparts in real life, and nearly all the incidents of the story are founded on fact. And the other sort of interesting thing about the book is that the true story is actually based here in Ontario, in the small town of Meaford, which is a couple hours away from Toronto. So I thought that was interesting, too. The story is, the first two chapters are pretty grueling to get through. They're just a horrific abuse of farm animals and a litter of puppies and a dog. But then the story moves on. The dog is rescued and spends his life with Laura, and they have, you know, adventures and, you know, different things happen to them. But throughout the whole book, there's great messages. There's, you know, messages about humane education for children. There's a long soliloquy from someone about vegetarianism. There's talk about against tail docking. There's things against trapping and hunting. So it's really good, and it's interesting that it's still so timely, given that it's over 100 years old, mm-hmm. and all these messages are still current. So I think that's really good, too. And the one other thing I wanted to mention about the book is that in Meaford, there's actually a Beautiful Joe Heritage Society, which was formed in 1994, I guess, on the 100th anniversary of the book. They've established a Canine Hall of Fame, a Beautiful Joe Museum, and a Beautiful Joe Park in Meaford, Ontario, and it's to promote, I'm just going to read from the book here, the society will honor those animals which have demonstrated outstanding interactions with humans and will provide an international forum for education, research, and information on dog-related matters. In addition, the achievements of Margaret Marshall Saunders, one of Canada's first writers of great children's books, will be showcased to the world. So I really recommend the book. I think it's great.
Super. I'm holding in my hand Naja's very beat-up copy of Charlotte's Web, which I understand that she had read as a younger person, and now her daughter is enjoying. So I'm just going to read the back of the book and then maybe a chapter from it as well. And it says here, this is the story of a little girl named Fern who loved a little pig named Wilbur, and of Wilbur's dear friend Charlotte, a beautiful large gray spider who lived with Wilbur in the barn. With the help of Templeton the rat, who never did anything for anybody unless there was something in it for him, and by a wonderfully clever plan of her own, Charlotte saved the life of Wilbur, who by this time had grown up to be quite a pig. So this is chapter 7, and it's called Bad News. Wilbur liked Charlotte better and better each day. Her campaign against insects seemed sensible and useful. Hardly anybody around the farm had a good word to say for a fly. Flies spent their time pestering others. Cows hated them. The horses detested them. The sheep loathed them. Mr. and Mrs. Zuckerman were always complaining about them and putting up screens. Wilbur admired the way that Charlotte managed. He was particularly glad that she always put her victim to sleep before eating it. "It's really thoughtful of you to do that, Charlotte," he said. "Yes," she replied in her sweet musical voice. "I always give them an anesthetic so they won't feel pain. It's a little service I throw in." As the days went by, Wilbur grew and grew. He ate 3 big meals a day. He spent long hours lying on his side, half asleep, dreaming pleasant dreams. He enjoyed good health, and he gained a lot of weight. One afternoon, when Fern was sitting on her stool, the oldest sheep walked into the barn and stopped to pay a call on Wilbur. "Hello," she said. "Seems to me that you're putting on weight." "Yes, I am, I guess," replied Wilbur. "At my age, it's a good idea to just keep gaining." "Just the same, I don't envy you," said the old sheep. "You know why they're fattening you up, don't you?" "No," said Wilbur. "Well, I don't like to spread bad news," said the sheep, "but they're fattening you up because they're going to kill you. That's why." "They're going to what?" screamed Wilbur. Fern grew rigid on her stool. "Kill you. Turn you into smoked bacon and ham," continued old sheep. "Almost all young pigs get murdered by the farmer as soon as the real cold weather sets in. There's a regular conspiracy around here to kill you at Christmas time. Everybody's in the plot. Lurvy, Zuckerman, even John Arable." "Mr. Arable?" sobbed Wilbur. "Fern's father?" certainly. When a pig is to be butchered, everybody helps. I'm an old sheep, and I see the same thing, same old business, year after year. Arable arrives with his 22, shoots the... Stop! Screamed Wilbert. I don't want to die! Save me! Save me! Fern was just about to jump up when a voice was heard. Be quiet, Wilbert, said Charlotte, who had been listening to this awful conversation. I can't be quiet, screamed Wilbur, racing up and down. I don't want to be killed. I don't want to die. Is it true what the old sheep says, Charlotte? Is it true that they are going to kill me when the cold weather comes? Well, said the spider, plucking herself thoughtfully at the web. The old sheep may have been around the barn a long time. She has seen many a spring pig come and go. If she says they plan to kill you, I'm sure it's true. It's also the dirtiest trick I've ever heard. What people don't think of. Wilbur burst into tears. I don't want to die, he moaned. I want to stay alive right here in my comfortable manure pile with all my friends. I want to breathe the beautiful air and lie in the beautiful sun. You're certainly making a beautiful noise, snapped the old sheep. I don't want to die, screamed Wilbur, throwing himself on the ground. You shall not die, said Charlotte briskly. What? Really? Cried Wilbur. You're going to save me? I am, said Charlotte. How? Said Wilbur. That remains to be seen, but I'm going to save you, and I want you to quiet down immediately. You're carrying on in such a childish way. Stop your crying. I can't stand hysterics.
I think that's such a great book. I'm always curious to know how the book is such a classic, and it's so popular, but it's read by parents of kids who aren't vegetarian, and
oh, sure.
They don't promote the vegetarianism. I guess it's, you won't eat Wilbur, but you'll eat other pigs that you don't know, so I guess mm-hmm. that's how they get around the issue. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about was a little bit of some books that are for a bit of a younger audience. My daughter's 3, and there's a few books that I found. There aren't actually a lot of books out there that are promoting vegetarianism for kids, but there's two books, Victor's Picnic and Victor the Vegetarian. One's a sequel to the other, and they're cute little books. My daughter quite likes the one, Victor's Picnic, with the vegetarian animals. The drawings aren't that great, but the message is there, and it's very clear, and it's a very strong vegetarian message, and it's also, the one is very educational about what foods you actually eat, so that's a good one. And the other book that I can recommend is Farm Sanctuary has put out a children's book. It's called Hope. And it's based on the true story of Hope the pig, who was rescued from stockyards. And it's a children's book, and you can order it from Farm Sanctuary directly, and it comes with a little stuffed pig with it. And I think one thing that I really appreciate about that book is that it's a very honest portrayal of the terrible, terrible life this pig has led until it's rescued. The other book that I just recently found, which I thought was a cute one, it's called Bob and Shirley, A Tale of Two Lobsters, and it's by Harriet Seifert, and it's a true story, which I thought was really cute, because it's based on two lobsters that are captured in Maine, and they're in a tank, and they're being sold, mm-hmm. and then there's pictures in the book, a whole big protest, people with their signs outside of the store, and the lobsters actually get rescued and sent back to the ocean, which I thought was great.
Cool.
So those are a few titles that would be good for littler kids too. And there was one other one we were going to talk about.
Herb, yes. The Vegetarian Dragon. It looks like a really beautiful book. It's really well illustrated. It said, Herb, the Vegetarian Dragon, is the story of how the only vegetarian dragon in the forest tries to stand up for his own values, only to find himself jailed. His very life is in jeopardy. When he refuses dragon meat hooks offered to freedom in exchange for becoming a meat eater like his peers, while Herb is willing and ready to be friendly with the carnivorous dragons and considerate of their ways, they are not agreeable to letting him be different. For the young reader, the social issue being explored in the subtext underlying the action is this. Sometimes accepting other people means walking a thin line between appreciating them for who they are and keeping yourself open to new ideas, while still standing up for your own values. I hope you enjoy this book as much as I enjoyed writing it. And I know that you'll like Debbie Harder's wonderfully colorful illustrations. It's interesting, too, because maybe the subtext is we should be questioning why people don't eat meat, or some people do. But anyway, that's my own editorializing about it. If you want descriptions or more information about the books, because I know that we sometimes read the titles pretty fast and people can't write them down in time. Again, our email address is ciutanimalvoices@hotmail.com. So if there's a question about a book that you'd like to get a hold of, you can always drop us a line and we'll write you back.
And I'd love to hear from other mothers out there if they have some good book titles, because I'm searching desperately for more.
For fathers?
Yeah, anyone. Yeah. That has some good book titles that they could promote that are good for kids. Lauren, you were going to mention one other book, which isn't a storybook so much.
No, but this is I thought this was such a cool book, so I wanted to bring it in. It's by, I think they changed their organization's name, but by one of the co-founders, Zoe Wheel, of the Center for Compassionate Living, which is just an incredible group based out of Maine. This book is geared more towards elementary or junior high school kids, and it basically tries to present an overview of a lot of different types of animal rights issues, animal issues, things about, you know, fur, things about intensive agriculture, things about circuses, animals in captivity, that kind of thing. So, yeah, it says on the back, from companion animals to wild animals, from animals raised for food production to those used in entertainment and experimentation, Animals in Society offers secondary school students a thorough and balanced introduction to our treatment of and relationship with animals. Provocative questions and projects at the end of each chapter give students an opportunity to consider the issues raised and to pursue a deeper understanding of animals in society. And I really like that aspect about the critical thinking questions in the end, because I remember talking with Zoe Wheel and Ray Sakura and said, you know, how do you talk to kids about these issues, and how do you get invited into schools that you can come in and do a presentation on animals and agriculture? And they said, well, what we do is we all frame it in terms of critical thinking questions. So we'll say, well, look at this nutritional chart and tell us what you think about it. And the kids will look at it, and they'll, you know, you're supposed to have this many servings of milk and this many servings of meat. And they'll say, so who was this put out by? Who was this sponsored by? And the kids will say, well, it says the Meat and Dairy Board here.
Right.
And they'll say, well, what do you think about that? What do you think about the information? And getting the kids to kind of investigate for themselves, and it's not so much about going in and saying, you should not eat meat.
Not a preachy kind of message.
And I thought that was so great. I mean, they do really amazing stuff. I mean, they're some of the two most amazing activists that I know, and they take kids on tours of factory farms and slaughterhouses, and I really like to talk with them about how they navigate that in a way that doesn't, you know, like we were talking about before, traumatized kids, but at the same time really raises the important questions that they're getting messages about anyway. So I would definitely suggest checking out this book called Animals and Societies, Facts and Perspectives on Our Treatment of Animals.
So there you have it. Those are some good book titles to start out with if you've got kids. Actually, some of the books are great to read.
Yeah.
Even if I still read Charlotte's Web. I still love that story.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to announce next week's show, which we're going to be speaking with a group, psychologists for the ethical treatment of animals, and hopefully I'll have my friend who's in clinical psychology come on and ask her some questions. She's an animal rights activist as well. And also the woman that we're interviewing from that group is the author of the new book, Animal Grace. So please stay tuned next week.
Thanks for listening.